Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to a really intriguing edition of News You Can Use on this Sunday morning. I'm Ann Baldwin, and it's good to have you along with us today. Also, I want to give a shout out to Dan Simeone. He's always on his way to golf, and he listens to the show religiously, so hit him straight today, Dan. You're my shout out of the day. So this is going to be an unbelievable conversation that you're going to want to stay tuned for, and if you're late for church, I apologize, but we've got Rich Cohen, who is on the program today, and he's the author of the recently published book, Murder in the Dollhouse, The Jennifer Dulos Story. And I really appreciate you, Rich, taking the time to talk about this. I think everybody in Connecticut and even nationally is aware of this case and how mysterious and how heartbreaking. I mean, so many emotions went into this case. Why don't you talk a little bit about what got you interested in writing an actual book about this particular case?
Well, I live in Ridgefield, which is right next to New Canaan. Mm-hmm. And when Jennifer Dulos dropped her kids off at the New Canaan Country School and seemingly vanished and quickly turned into kind of a manhunt or a person hunt, I heard about it in the way of just a parent and a husband around the same age in the same area. And it was just terror. You know, people were just very upset and scared. And then the editor of Airmail, Graydon Carter, which is where I write stories for, asked me to cover it like a reporter because he knew I lived nearby. And at first I didn't want to because I thought it was well covered. It was on the cover of the New York Times and everything and on the news. But then I got the arrest warrants and I started reading the details. And the details, many of which didn't, you know, make it into the police report, into the newspaper coverage because you only have limited space.
Exactly.
They were so evocative, mm-hmm, of my time, my place in the world, my friends, all the things we hoped for, all the trouble we got into. We're exactly the same age, Jennifer Dulos, and I think I'm a month or younger than her, a month older.
Did you know her?
I must have met her because as I got into the book, it turns out, I didn't realize it at first because she changed her name, that we had many, many, many friends in common, including somebody she very seriously dated and almost married is a really good friend of mine. And they had these legendary parties in Lower Manhattan in the 90s that was all writers and bands and artists. And I was at pretty much all of those, but it's all a big blur, to be honest. But and then later on, I worked in television. I was a writer on a TV show, and I worked with the same people she had worked with as a playwright in New York. So I felt it was really close. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I understood her. And I felt like when you read a lot of the newspaper stories and you read about her estranged marriage and her very contentious divorce with her husband, Fotis Dulos, one of the most contentious in Connecticut state history with 400 filings, and they never even got to the divorce part. I felt like I understood what was missing from all the coverage, which was her fear.
Mm-hmm.
And how she got herself into this situation, which if you'd told her 10 years before, she wouldn't have believed possible, I don't think.
Right. We're speaking with Rich Cohen. He is the author of the recently published book, Murder in the Dollhouse, The Jennifer Dulos Story. And if I can, Rich, I want to just read a little bit about, you know, the book and how it's described. It says it's a nail-biting, edge-of-your-seat investigation into the mysterious disappearance of Jennifer Dulos and the aftershocks that rattled a wealthy suburb. You use the word in the description of your book, chilling. Why?
Well, it's the way this extreme violence, because though her body was never found, we know that she was a victim of extreme, very personal violence committed by somebody who was very angry at her, I guess, because what they found that allowed them to prove her guilty, the prove a murder, that she'd been murdered, is she lost so much blood in her own garage where she was attacked that the state's coroner said no person could survive the loss of that amount of blood unless they were like in the hospital already. So the way that happened in the most mundane, most domestic of spaces, where you feel the most safe, in your own house, in your own garage, after dropping your kids off at school, you open the door and there he is waiting for you, and you know he has not good things in mind for you. And it just, and a beautiful day, you know, in Memorial Day 6 years ago. And I just think that it sort of showed that these were very wealthy people. Jennifer was the niece of Liz Claiborne. Her father was a very, very successful businessman. Her mother was very successful. They had all the money and all the advantages. But if somebody really means to do you harm, even that much money can't protect you.
Right.
Really know what's going on in anyone else's house. So you might think they have the perfect life. You don't really know.
You never know. You never know. Do you think that Fotis Doulos did this alone?
Yes.
No,
I mean, I think that he had, they found Michelle Traconis, who was his paramour, guilty of conspiring with him. And she was sentenced to 14 years in jail. And some people swear to her innocence, but I believe, from what I know, that he had help from at least his paramour and possibly other people who've never been discovered or named. And one of the reasons I think possibly you've never found her body is he could very well have sort of handed her body off to someone else.
Right. You know, you don't know what money can buy, right? I mean, you just don't know. And you don't know what people are capable of. So again, the book is Murder in the Dollhouse. It is available on Amazon. And actually on Amazon, it's one of the top new releases in Murder and Mayhem. That's the category that it's in. Are you okay with that category?
I mean, other people give things names. I just wanted to cover the story, write about it. And it was important to me because when I spoke to her boyfriend, the person who'd been her boyfriend, he said the one thing he didn't like about the coverage is that, you know, in these stories, true crime stories, the victim is just turned into kind of a prop or a body in a crime scene photo. And he felt what was lost was the person he knew. And you have to understand what a special person she was to understand the enormousness of the violent crime. So I saw it as a kind of a true crime book that was new and that it wasn't going to be about death, but about her life and the decisions we make and how you end up where you end up and the role that missing red flags plays and the role that just bad luck plays and how anybody could really end up in this situation. And a lot of people have ended up in bad situations, not this bad. So they can, after that's done, they can call it true crime. They can call it whatever they call it on Amazon. The fact is, to me, it's just a book about like life in modern America and what can go wrong.
How long did it take you to write the book?
Well, it wasn't like a start and finish thing because I was writing those airmail stories.
Right.
So it probably took like 3 years. Basically, I started covering it before Fotis Doulos was arrested and charged.
Mm-hmm.
So you can figure out, like 2019.
Right.
So that's more like 6 years. But honestly, the older I get, the quicker it goes. And I lose
it
track
does.
Of time.
Where did the day go? I say it every night.
Yeah.
How many people, and do you want to divulge? Again, it's all in the book. We don't want to give everything away. But, you know, who was your gotcha kind of interview that you include in the book that you found the most compelling? What was the aha
moment?
Well,
there were really three parts to this story. There was first part was Jennifer before Fotis Doulos. That was the part where I would have met her. That was the part where we had the same friends and we're in the same world. And no one's really explored that. And that to me was very, very interesting. And I spoke to a lot of people that were friends with her that knew her. And then there was the part where she was with Fotis. And then there's the divorce. Now, for the divorce, what I got a lot of sort of under the table help from a lot of attorneys in the Fairfield County divorce system who operated as whistleblowers because they felt this case was a good example of what was wrong, what is wrong with the divorce court and how it can be weaponized and how it takes, you know, what should be a separation between a couple and turns it into a war were the children, and she had five children, five little kids.
I know.
Five kids in like 7 years.
Yeah.
Get turned into sort of weapons for the parents to use against each other. And there's a real ugliness, and it puts a lot of stress on people. Most people, you know, this is a very upsetting thing, and they move past it. Every now and then, you get somebody involved in this process who's like not quite right in the head. And I believe Fotis Doulos is probably a psychopath, and that he didn't experience empathy, as you might know it. And you put a person like that in the situation, and you can get a worst case scenario type situation, which is what you had here.
Right. So where else did you go with the story? And are you still covering it today?
Well, what's happened is since the book has come out, I've heard from so many more people who have more information.
Wow. That's what happens, right? They come out of the woodwork, and you know, you're such an established and talented writer and reporter. Now people see the book, read the book, and say, guess what, you don't know.
Right. And that's happening right now. And I thought maybe I wouldn't write about this again until the last conspirator or possible alleged conspirator, Ken Mawhinney, who was friends with Fotis, and his lawyer gets tried or whatever happens to him. But now I think that there is a lot more, even including on thoughts about where her body is, that is going to keep me engaged in this story.
You've written a lot of books. Talk about some of your other work, and then how does this stack up to those, or does it? Is it different?
Well, I think it's the best book I've written and the best reported book, best reporting I've done. But I think that you have to, I've written a lot of books, and I think that you have to feel like you're getting better. Otherwise, it's just depressing. So you don't want to think you're getting worse. So of course I would think that, but my books have followed things that have obsessed me. So they don't seem like they connect, but they do connect because it's all stuff that's obsessed me. And one reason I decided to write this as a book instead of articles was even after I finished 12 airmail articles, I felt like I was still thinking about Jennifer, dreaming about Jennifer and the crime. And it was like a puzzle that my mind was trying to solve at night. And whenever that happens, I know that you're not done with the story. Other books I've written, one that overlapped is I wrote a book about my life as a hockey parent here in Fairfield County called Pee Wee's, which the Confessions of a Hockey Parent.
How
and
fun.
And you find yourself like before you're a parent looking at parents who act like idiots at a sporting event, and you like think what's wrong with them, and then you find yourself doing the same thing. It's like you just can't help yourself. You get so into it. So and the Fotis Doulos was an extreme version of a sport parent, except the sport was water skiing, mm-hmm. which is unusual because normally I think of water skiing as not a competitive sport, but a real fun sport.
Right.
But to him, it was a competitive sport, like a winner take all kind of sport, which whatever. So and then I wrote a book about my father called Herbie. I've written a bunch of books. And I'm from Chicago. So I wrote a book about the 1985 Chicago Bears and about the Chicago Cubs finally winning the World Series in 2016.
Well, you've been on the New York Times bestseller list quite a few times. Talk about what's Tough Jews Monsters.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Brayton, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Brayton wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, Tough Jews is my first book.
Okay.
And I was very young, and I really loved gangster stories. I loved The Godfather. I loved Goodfellas. Goodfellas hadn't come out much earlier. And I wanted to basically write a gangster book, but I felt like they had all been written. But if I could write about the Jewish gangsters, who now you hear a lot more about them, and somewhat as a result of Tough Jews, the Jewish gangsters, people didn't know about them. And I'm talking about guys with names like Pittsburgh Phil Strauss and Kid Twist Relis and this whole group of guys in Brooklyn, that I could write a Jewish gangster story with a new slant to it, you know?
Uh-huh.
And that's what it was. It was like really my way of writing a different slant on the gangster story.
Wow.
Monsters was the book about the 85 Bears because...
Oh, that's separate. I see. Okay. All right.
Yeah, Monsters is the Bears are were that was 1998, Tough Jews, but Monsters, which was just a few years ago, is the Bears' nickname is Monsters of the Midway.
Okay.
Going way back. And they were, you know, this devastating defensive team. And to a little kid, I was in high school. They were monsters in the very best way.
That's great. All these things that you've done, and it sounds like, you know, your heart and your passion is in them. You're also a regular writer, or your staff writer for the Wall Street Journal. What's your role there?
Well, it kind of evolved by accident, but I've been writing for them a little bit here and there. And they asked me to write a column called Back When, which is basically about stuff that I was fascinated by or took over my life as a kid. So just some recent articles, I wrote one about a bright blue tuxedo I wore at my prom, which seemed like a great idea, but turned out to be humiliating. I wrote about Pop Rocks and the fear that, you know, the rumor that the kid Mikey from the Life cereal commercial had been killed by a mixture of Pop Rocks and Coke.
I remember that one.
I wrote about Evel Knievel and our imitation of him by taking many dangerous jumps on our dirt bikes. And it's mostly been stuff like that. The next one is about the anniversary of Jaws and how Jaws made us all very terrified to go in the water, even though it was only Lake Michigan, where there are no sharks. We believe it's possible a shark could still get us. I had a friend who was scared to go swimming in a pool after he saw Jaws.
Oh, come on.
He wasn't the smartest kid I grew up with, but he was scared of the pool.
Oh, yeah. It's funny how these things can really change the way people look at things. Rich Cohen is the author of Murder in the Dollhouse, the Jennifer Dulos story. How much do you talk about the kids?
I try not to talk about the kids because they're kids and you don't want to wreck their life. And they're minors and everything else. And I didn't want to write about the kids. But I write about them only to the extent that they are central to the divorce and the breakup of the marriage, because that's what they were fighting over. The whole thing, the reason why the divorce was so extended was because Fotis Dulos at first wanted everything. And what he wanted was unreasonable. He wanted basically to keep his wife, keep his connection to her mother, which meant their money, because he was floated by his in-laws' money, keep his house, and keep his paramour, and have them all live in one house. And he promised Jennifer, his wife, that don't worry, she could have her own room.
Wow. So, see, those are the details you don't get, right? Like you said when we started this conversation, you know, news stories are only, what, two minutes and 30 seconds. You know, you've only got so many column inches or room online for these articles. So I think it's really intriguing. And that's probably, you know, where you get this description of the book. It's just chilling, some of the details and how you are able to dig so deep, it sounds.
Yeah. And by the way, just to finish that, which is the court early on, before the divorce really even started, said, you know, you get visitation rights with your kids, basically, but you can't mix your kids with your paramour. So if the kids are coming over, she can't be there. And he kept violating that, Fotis, and he kept getting caught. And every time he got caught, he lost more of his rights, and he went to greater lengths to obfuscate, and he got more angry. And it was when you go through it, it's just like watching water start to boil. You know, it's just going to blow.
Well, anybody, I mean, including myself, that's been through a divorce, it's not usually a pleasant process. I mean, there is a lot of emotion and a lot of stuff that goes into that. But, you know, the way you describe it, is very interesting, because, you know, he just kept breaking the rules because I think he thought he was above the rules. But how delusional that you think you can bring your mistress into your house and give your wife her own bedroom. I mean, that's a chapter out of like Sister Wives or something.
Well, here's another little detail that sort of sums him up, I think, which is they had to have, you know, state guardian look for their kid, look after the kids and represent the kids' issues, rights. Mm-hmm. And they had to pay for that.
Oh, yeah.
So the judge ordered that they had to split the payment.
Guardian ad litem, they call them.
Right. The judge ordered it's a 50-50 deal.
Uh-huh.
He didn't pay. He wouldn't pay. So Jennifer paid the whole thing. otherwise the guy was going to, you know, whatever, it wasn't going to work. So she paid the whole thing. And then when he came into court and had his opinions, Fotis would say, well, you can't trust him. He's paid by Jennifer.
Mm. Wow.
You know, so it was like this. And he did think, this is part of why I think he was like a textbook psychopath, not like a guy in the movies, like a vampire movie, but these different things he did. And one is he believed he was smarter than everybody. And he kept thinking he could do things and not get caught because he was so smart. And he kept getting caught. Right up to the day that she disappeared, he was doing very clever things to hide himself, but they weren't quite as clever as he thought they were.
Right. Where do you think this ends? How do you think it ends? I mean, it's been how many years now, and they still haven't found her body. Nobody knows where she is. Do you think that'll ever come to fruition? Do you think there'll be closure?
I kind of think that he possibly handed her body off to somebody else who possibly had come in from Greece to help him. And if that's the case, all he had to do is go into the woods somewhere around New Canaan and bury her, and she will not be found until it happens by accident. And people ask how long that could take to happen. Well, I'll tell you, here in Richfield, a few years ago, somebody was extending their basement and they came across a buried body.
What?
And they called the police and they said, well, these bodies, this is old. We got to call in the state. And the state came in and they discovered like five or six bodies.
Oh my
like
God.
A mass grave. And when they researched it, it was British. It was the skeletons of British soldiers killed during the Revolutionary War.
Unreal.
And so this is how long it took. And it was only by accident. And this wasn't somewhere in the woods. This is right on Main Street in Richfield in the most trafficked part of town. So what you forget when you're looking for somebody and ask why they haven't found her, the world is very, very big and we are very, very small.
Wow, that's amazing. You should write a book about the soldiers found in the backyard.
it's wild. I just was on a tour. That's why it's in my head, because I was on a tour about the Battle of Ridgefield from the Revolutionary War. It's fascinating.
Well, it is fascinating. Well, I really hope that people pick up this book, because it sounds amazing. It sounds like you had the opportunity to get some like good background, potentially even, you know, off the record information that, you know, that you needed to really flush this thing out. So you can get the book. Again, the name of it is Murder in the Dollhouse, the Jennifer Doulos story. And Rich Cohen is the article. You can get this book. It's only been published since the end of May. So it's on Amazon, and you can also get it at Barnes & Noble. How did you come up with the title, Murder in the Dollhouse?
Well, that's a good question. When she was a little girl, Jennifer, she was obsessed with dollhouses. And she would spend hours trying to sort of create the perfect life in her dollhouse. And when she moved up to Farmington and moved into a 10,000 square foot house, it was like she was trying to replicate her dollhouse in the real world. But the real world is different than the fantasy. And the real world is Fotis Doulos, and you end up with a murder in the dollhouse.
The biggest mistake she probably made in her entire life, and she was warned, right?
Yeah, but she had this very successful career as a playwright.
Yeah.
And suddenly she remembered she wanted to have a big family. And she ultimately had five kids. And she was like running out of time biologically. And here comes this guy who was very handsome.
Yeah.
He'd gone to college with her, Brown. So the feeling was she was sort of in the same social circle. He had all the credentials. And so she let her guard down. And it was a big, giant mistake. And the red flag for her was after she'd gone on three dates with him, she finally searched the internet for him and found that he was already married.
Oh, my God.
And when she confronted him, she said she wouldn't see somebody who was married. He then quickly got divorced. Within 4 months of their meeting and her confronting him, he was divorced. And within 4 months of that, they were married. And within a year of that, they had twins. So it all happened so fast, head snappingly fast,
right.
You know, and that's how things get by you when you don't take the time.
Yeah. Almost. And then the son of a bitch takes the easy way out. You know, Fotis Doulos kills himself.
Yeah. Well, because his whole thing was he stuck it on everybody else. So he killed Jennifer. And then when it came time to blame somebody, he kills himself and leaves his paramour to be the one to take the brunt of the punishment from the state.
Mm-hmm.
So he screwed her in the end too.
Whoa. So where do you think this all ends up? I mean, everybody's going to go to jail. Michelle Tacones. I mean, you got the lawyer.
Well, she's in jail.
She's in jail, right.
She's going to try
to appeal. Right.
And we'll see what happens. I think it's, I was at the trial of her, and the state's case was so incredibly strong. So I don't know what she's going to be able to argue, because you have to actually argue that something inappropriate was done. It's not just to say, I wish they found differently. That's not enough, you know?
Yeah. And always in any case, right? It's harder when you don't have a body. I mean, it makes it more complicated.
Right. I mean, hopefully the legacy of this is people are, you know, because the whole thing is when Jennifer tried to get a restraining order, the lawyer argued, well, he's never laid a hand on her. He's never been a violent person. But he was violent in non-physical ways. He was torturing
verbally
her
abusive,
mentally.
Yeah, yeah.
And they passed this law called Jennifer's Law, named for Jennifer and another woman named Jennifer, for something called coercive control, where a person can be tortured, manipulated, and abused without actually being beat up. And that's what happened here. And hopefully people take that more seriously. And you get yourself out, recognize these bad situations, and get out before it's too late. And she did get out, you know, and she had bodyguards, and she moved far away. She moved from Farmington to New Canaan. But, you know, it's hard to criticize anything she did, because he was so driven by whatever was driving him. But you like to think that other people not dealing with maybe a psychopath recognize the warning signs and are able to get themselves out before it's too late.
You know, Rich Cohen, that's great advice. Again, Murder in the Dollhouse, the Jennifer Dulos story. Well, what an intriguing background on what went into your writing this book, Rich. And again, thank you so much for coming on the show, and continued success. I'm really looking forward. I got to admit, I haven't read the book yet, but I'm going to go get it today at Barnes & Noble.
All right, great. Thanks.
Okay, take care. And thanks to all of you for tuning in to this edition of News You Can Use. I'm Ann Baldwin, and we'll see you back here next time.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.